The Life of Mr. Hugh Binning. Copyright 2008 Hail and Fire. This audiobook, a 2008 edition, is provided free by the Hail and Fire Library, www.hailandfire.com, for all non-profit, personal uses and distributions. This audiobook is not licensed for republication in any form without prior written consent from Hail and Fire. However, a URL link to the Hail and Fire Library may be published in order to encourage downloading of this audiobook. There being a great demand for the several books that are printed under Mr. Binning's name, it was judged proper to undertake a new and correct impression of them in one volume. This being done, the publishers were much concerned to have the life of such an useful and eminent minister of Christ written, in justice to his memory, and his great services in the work of the gospel, that it might go along with this impression. We living now at so great distance from the time wherein he made a figure in the world, must be at a considerable loss in giving an exact and particular relation. However, his pious and exemplary life may in some measure be known from his writings, and for this end, a great many bright passages might be gathered out of them, which would raise his character highly in the eyes of all good men. For the Reverend Mr. Robert Moord, minister in Glasgow, observed that his life was his sermons put in print, by which means they who did forget what he had said in the pulpit, by seeing what he did in his conversation, might remember what they had forgot. He lived as he spoke, and spoke as he lived. All due pains have been taken to procure proper materials and good vouchers of the following narration. Some few things are learned from the prefaces prefixed to his several pieces by worthy and able divines, who revised and published them. More accounts of him were furnished by persons of great credit, on whose veracity we can safely rely. But the most remarkable passages in his life are happily preserved in a letter written by Mr. Moord to the Reverend Mr. James Coleman, sometime minister at Sluys in Flanders. The writer of his life must in the entry confess that his part is so small that he can scarce assume anything to himself, but the procuring the materials from others, the copying out of those things that were of any moment, and disposing them in the best and most natural order he could think of. Having studied the strictness of a severe historian, without helping out things with his invention or setting them off by a rhetorical style of language. Nay, all that is contained in Mr. M. Ward's large letter concerning him is told almost in his very words, with a little variation of the order wherein he had placed the same, omitting the many long digressions on several subjects which that worthy person judged fit to insist upon, taking occasion from what he had noticed concerning Mr. Binning to enlarge on the same. John Binning of Dalvenan was married to Margaret McCall, a daughter of Mr. Matthew McCall, minister at Bothwell, and sister to Mr. Hugh McCall, one of the ministers of Edinburgh. He had by her Mr. Hugh and Alexander. The father was possessed of no inconsiderable estate in the Shire of Ayr, for Mr. Hugh having died before his father, John, the only son of Mr. Hugh, was served heir to his grandfather in the lands of Dalvenan. Alexander, the second son, who died about 10 years ago, got the lands of Macrimore, and was married to a daughter of Alexander Crawford of Kerse, and is succeeded therein by his son John Binning, at present a writer in Edinburgh. The worldly circumstances of the grandfather being so good, he was thereby enabled to give his son Hugh a liberal education, the good and desirable effects of which appeared very early upon him. The greatness of his spirit and capacity gave his parents good ground to conceive the pleasant hope of his being a promising child. When he was at the grammar school, he made so great proficiency in the knowledge of the Latin tongue and Roman authors that he outstripped his condisciples, even such as were some years older than himself. When his fellow schoolboys went to their play and diversion, he declined their society, and chose to employ himself, either in secret duty with God, or conference with religious people. His pastime was to recreate himself in this manner. He had an aversion to sports, games, and other diversions, not from any moroseness, or melancholy of temper, being rather of an affable, cheerful and debonair disposition, but thinking that time was too precious to be lavished away in these things. Religion and religious exercises were his choice, and the time he had to spare from his studies he spent that way. He began to have sweet familiarity with God, and to live in near communion with Him, before others began seriously to lay to heart their lost and unconditioned by nature, and that additional misery they expose themselves to, by walking in a wicked way and sinful course. When he arrived at the 13th or 14th year of his age, he had even then attained so much experience in the ways of God, that the most judicious and exercised Christians in the place confessed they were much edified, strengthened, and comforted by him, nay, that he provoked them to diligence in the duties of religion, being abundantly sensible that they were much outrun by a youth. Before he was 14 years old, he entered upon the study of philosophy in the University of Glasgow, wherein he made very considerable progress, and with as much facility outstripped his fellow students, as he had done his condisciples in the Latin school, by which means, he came to be taken notice of in the college by the professors and students. And at the same time that he made proficiency in the liberal sciences, he advanced remarkably in religion. The abstruse depths of philosophy, which are the torture of slow engines and weak capacities, he dived into without any trouble or pain. And notwithstanding his surprising attainments and improvements, his great acumen and ready apprehension of things, whereby he was able to do more in 1 hour than others in some days by hard study and close application, and though on these accounts he was much respected by the eminent ministers of the city, and learned professors of the university, yet was he ever humble, never exalted above measure, nor swelled with the timpani of pride and self-conceit, the common foible and disease of young men of any greatness of spirit. So soon as he had finished his course of philosophy, he was made master of arts with great applause, and having furnished his mind with an uncommon measure of the ancillary knowledge of letters, he began the study of divinity, with a view to serve God in the holy ministry. At which time there happened to be a vacancy in the College of Glasgow, by the resignation of Mr. James Dalrymple of Stair, who had been Mr. Binning's master. This gentleman was so great and so good a man, that it is impossible to avoid giving an account of some of the remarkable things of his life. The first employment he had was in the army, being a captain in William Earl of Glencairn's regiment of foot, but as he had made his studies with great application, at the earnest request of the professors of the University of Glasgow, he stood as candidate for a chair of philosophy, in a comparative trial, in buff and scarlet, the military dress of those days, to which he was with great applause preferred. In this station he was greatly esteemed for his uncommon abilities in philosophy, and other parts of learning. But being resolved to follow the study of the law, he soon resigned his office of professor, and entered advocate upon the 7th of February, 1648, and quickly distinguished himself by his pleadings before the court of session, avoiding always to take any employment, either as advocate or judge, in criminal matters, though often respectively pressed to accept of both, which proceeded from a delicacy in his opinion, lest, to wit, he might possibly be the instrument either of making the innocent suffer, or to acquit the guilty. In this situation he continued, till the tender was imposed, when he, with many other eminent lawyers, withdrew from the bar. On June 26th, 1657, he was, by a commission signed by General Monk, in name of the Protector's Council of Scotland, appointed to be one of the judges, which was soon confirmed by a nomination directly from the Protector himself, in the month of July thereafter, which he had no inclination to accept of, being himself no favourer of the usurpation. For, as he had been secretary to the commission which had been sent to the King to Breda, he had waited upon His Majesty upon his landing in the north. However, being importunately pressed to accept by many eminent men, and amongst them by several ministers, who all distinguished between his serving as one of the council under the Protector, and exercising the office of a judge, by administrating justice to his fellow subjects, he did accept, and his act of admission only bears his giving his oath, de fidei administrationer. After the Restoration, he was made by the King one of the ordinary Lords of Session, by His Majesty's nomination, dated at Whitehall, February 13, 16612. And in the year 1671, he was created President of that court, in the room of Sir John Gilmore of Craigmillar. In the Parliament 1681, he made a great appearance for securing the Protestant religion, and by reason of the difficulties of the times, he desired leave of His Majesty to retire from business, and live quietly in the country. But in this he was prevented by a commission, dated the 14th of October, 1681, which having passed the Great Seal was produced the 1st of November thereafter, by which commission he was superseded as President of the Session, and in the year 1682, was obliged for his safety to retire to Holland. For, though he had the King's promise that he should live undisturbed, yet he was let know that he could not be in safety, and after his retreat to Holland, several unjust but fruitless attempts were made to have him tried for treason, both before the Parliament and Justiciary, for no other reason than that he had always with sincerity and firmness given his opinion to the King and his ministers against the measures that were then followed, and which in the following reign at length brought about the glorious revolution, at which time, anno 1668, he attended King William in that expedition, by the success of which we were most happily delivered from tyranny and slavery. On November 1st, 1689, Sir James Dalrymple of Stair, his letter, as President of the Session was produced and recorded, and he was accordingly admitted and restored to his office. In the year 1690 he was created a Viscount upon account of his great services and merit. He published, while in Holland, his Institutions of the Law of Scotland, a more full edition of which came out in 1693, and two volumes in folio, of decisions, from the year 1661, to 1681 inclusive. He also published a system of physics, valued greatly at the time, and a book entitled, A Vindication of the Divine Attributes, was also his, in which there is discovered great force of argument and knowledge. He was looked upon, before his death, as the living oracle of our law, and at present his institutions are appealed to, as containing the true and solid principles of it. Mr. Binning, who had lately been his scholar, was determined after much entreaty, of which we shall presently give an account, to stand, as a candidate for that post. The masters of the college, according to the usual laudable custom, emitted a program, and sent it to all the universities in the kingdom, inviting such as had a mind to dispute for a profession of philosophy, to sist themselves before them, and offer themselves to compete for that preferment, giving assurance that without partiality and respect of persons, the place should be conferred upon him who should be found dignier at Doxier. The ministers of the city of Glasgow, considering how much it was the interest of the church that well-qualified persons be put into the profession of philosophy, and that universities by this means become most useful seminaries for the church, and that such as had served as regents in the college were ordinarily brought out to the ministry, who, as the divinity chairs became vacant, were advanced to that honor, many instances of which I am able to condescend upon, and they knowing that Mr. Binning was eminently pious, and one of a solid judgment, as well as of a bright genius, set upon him to assist himself among the other competitors, but had great difficulty to overcome his modesty. However, they at last prevailed with him to declare, before the masters, his willingness to undertake the dispute with others. There were two candidates more. One of them had the advantage of great interest with Dr. Strang, principal of the college at that time, and the other a scholar of great abilities, and of the same sentiments with the doctor, in some problematical points of divinity, which with great subtlety had been debated in the schools. Mr. Binning so managed the dispute and acquitted himself in all the parts of trial, that to the conviction of the judges he very much darkened his rivals. And as to the precise point of qualification, in respect of literature, cut off all shadow of a demur and pretense of difficulty in the decision. However, the doctor and some of the faculty who joined him, though they could not pretend that the candidate they appeared for had an equality, much less a superiority in the dispute, yet they argued, a coeteris paribus, that the person they inclined to prefer, being a citizen and son, having a good competency of learning, and being a person of more years, had greater experience than Mr. Binning could be supposed to have, and consequently was more fit to be a teacher of youth. Mr. Binning being but yesterday a fellow student with those he was to teach, it was not to be expected that the students would behave to him with that respect and regard which should be paid to a master. But to this it was replied that Mr. Binning was such a pregnant scholar, so wise and sedate as to be above all the follies and vanities of youth, that he knew very well how to let no man despise his youth. His wit was neither vain nor light, and his fancy was obedient to his reason, and what was wanting in years was sufficiently made up by his singular endowments, and more than ordinary qualifications. A member of the faculty, perceiving the struggle among them to be great and indeed the affair seemed to have been argued very plausibly on both sides, proposed a dispute between the two candidates extempore, upon any subject they should be pleased to prescribe. This being considered by the faculty, did quickly put a period to the division among them, and those who had opposed him not being willing to engage their friend again in the lists, with such an able antagonist, yielded the question, and Mr. Binning was elected. Mr. Binning was not full 19 years of age when he commenced regent and professor of philosophy, and though he had not time to prepare a system of any part of his profession, being instantly after his election to take up his class, yet such was the quickness and fertility of his invention, the tenaciousness of his memory, and the solidity of his judgment, that his dictates to the scholars had a great depth of learning of that kind, and perspicuity of expression. And I am assured that he was among the first in Scotland that began to reform philosophy from the barbarous terms and unintelligible distinctions of the schoolmen, and the many vain disputes and trifling subtleties, which rather perplexed the minds of the youth than furnished them with solid and useful knowledge. He continued in this profession for the space of 3 years, and discharged his trust so well that he gained the general applause of the university for his academical exercises. And this was the more wonderful, that having turned his thoughts towards the ministry, he carried on his theological studies at the same time, and made vast improvements therein, to which he was enabled by his deep penetration, and a memory so retentive that he scarcely forgot anything he had read or heard. It was easy and ordinary for him to transcribe any sermon, after he returned to his chamber, at such a full length, as that the intelligent and judicious reader who heard it preached should not find one sentence to be wanting. During this period of his life, he gave a proof and evidence of the great progress he had made in the knowledge of divinity, by a composure on that choice passage of the Holy Scripture, 2 Cor 5:14, "For the love of God constraineth us, because we thus judge, that, if one died for all, then were all dead." This performance he sent to a certain gentlewoman for her private edification, who had been detained at Edinburgh for a long time with business of importance, and having perused the same, she judged it was a sermon of some eminent minister in the west of Scotland, and put it into the hands of the then provost of Edinburgh for his opinion, who was so well satisfied with it, that supposing it to be taken from the mouth of one whom the city had formerly resolved to call, was restless till a call was brought about to him, to be one of the ministers of the city. But when the lady returned back to Glasgow, she found her mistake, by Mr. Binnings asking the discourse from her. This was the first discovery he had given of his great dexterity and ability in explaining of Scripture. At the expiration of his third year as a professor of philosophy, the parish of Govan, which lies adjacent to the city of Glasgow, and is within the bounds of that presbytery, happened to be vacant. Before this time, whoever was principal of the College of Glasgow was also minister of Govan. For Mr. Robert Boyd of Trockrigg, a person of very great learning, as his commentary on the Epistle to the Ephesians, and his Hecatomb Christiana testified, after he had been minister at Verchill in France, and professor of divinity in Somer, returned to Scotland, and was settled principal of the college, and minister of Govan. But this being attended with inconveniences, an alteration was made, and the presbytery having a view of supplying that vacancy with Mr. Binning, did take him upon trials, in order to his being licensed, as a preacher, and after he was licensed, he did preach at Govan, to the great satisfaction of that people. Mr. Binning was some time after called and invited to be minister of the said parish, which call the presbytery heartily approved of, and entered him upon trials for ordination, about the 22nd year of his age, and as a part of trials, they prescribed to him a common head, Deacon Cursu et Influxu Divino cum Actionibus Scripturarum, the occasion of which was, that Dr. Strang, principal of the college, and a member of the presbytery, had vented some peculiar notions upon that profound subject. And having delivered a very elaborate discourse, viva voce, to the admiration of all who heard it, he gave in, according to custom, his thesis to be impugned by the members of the presbytery, which was the direct antithesis of Dr. Strang's opinion in his dictates to the students on that controversy. The doctor being pitched upon to be one of his opponents, found his credit and reputation much engaged, and exerted his metaphysical and subtile talent on that occasion. But Mr. Binning maintained his ground by the weight and solidity of his defense, to the great satisfaction of all that were present, so that some were pleased to say, that young Mr. Binning appeared to be the old learned doctor. Nay, the doctor himself after the recounter, admiring Mr. Binning's abilities and parts, said, "Where hath this young man got all this learning and reading?" When he had finished his trials, he had the unanimous approbation of the presbytery, nay, their declaration and testimony of his fitness to be one of the ministers of the city, upon the first vacancy. And I am assured, that at the very same time the masters of the university had it in their view to bring him back again to their society, whenever the profession of divinity should become vacant. He was, considering his age, a prodigy of learning, for, before he had arrived at the 26th year of his life, he had such a large stock of useful knowledge, as to be philologus, philosophus, and theologus prastens, and might well have been an ornament to the most famous and flourishing university in Europe. This was the more astonishing, if we consider his weakness and infirmity of body, not being able to read much at one time, or to undergo the fatigue of assiduous study. But this was well supplied, partly by a memory that retained everything he heard or read, and partly by a solid penetrating judgment, whereby he digested it well, and made it his own, so that with a singular dexterity, he could bring it forth seasonably, and communicate it to the use and advantage of others, drained from the dregs he found about it, or intermixed with it. Insomuch that his knowledge seemed rather to be born with him, than to have been acquired by hard and laborious study. From his childhood he knew the scriptures, and from a boy had been under much deep and spiritual exercise, until the time or a little before it of his entry upon the office of the ministry, when he came to a great calm and lasting tranquility of mind, being mercifully relieved of all those doubtings which had for a long time greatly exercised him. And though he was of a tender and weakly constitution, yet love to Christ, and a concern for the good of precious souls committed to him, constrained him to such diligence in feeding the flock, as to spend himself in the work of the ministry. It was observed of him, that he was not much averse at any time from embracing an invitation to preach before the most experienced Christians, even the learned professors of the university, and the reverend ministers of the city, and when one of his most intimate friends noticed herein a difference from that modesty and self-denial, which appeared in the whole of his way and conduct, he took the freedom to ask him, how he came to be so easily prevailed with to preach before persons of so great experience and judgment, whose eminent gifts and graces he highly valued and esteemed. He made this excellent reply, that, when he had a clear call to mention his blessed master's name in any place, he had no more to say, but, here am I, send me. What am I that I should resist his heavenly call? And when he, whose name is holy and reverend, is spoken of and to, and is there present, the presence of no other person is to be regarded or dreaded, and under that impression, I forget who is present, and who is absent. Though he was bookish, and much intent upon the fulfilling of his ministry, he turned his thoughts to marriage, and did marry a virtuous and excellent person, Mistress Barbara Simpson, daughter of Mr. James Simpson, a minister in Ireland. Upon the day on which he was to be married, he went accompanied with his friends, amongst whom were some grave and worthy ministers, to an adjacent country congregation, upon the day of their weekly sermon. The minister of the parish delayed sermon till they should come, hoping to put the work upon one of the ministers he expected to be there. But all of them declining it, he next tried, if he could prevail with the bridegroom, and succeeded, though the invitation was not expected, and the nature of the occasion seemed to be somewhat alien from his being employed in that work. It was no difficult task to him upon a short warning to preach, having a prompt and ready gift. He was never at a loss for words and matter, and having stepped aside a little time to premeditate and implore his master's presence and assistance, for he was ever afraid to be alone in that work, he went immediately to the pulpit, and preached upon 1 Peti 15, "But as he who hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." At which time, he was so remarkably helped, that all acknowledged that God was with him of a truth. And the people of the parish, who had come to hear their own minister, a truly pious and excellent man, were so surprised and taken with him, as if God, besides his ordinary residence, so Mr. McWard expresses it, had sent them an extraordinary ambassador to negotiate a peace between God and them, and a prompt parent unto, and a skillful suitor of a spouse for Jesus Christ the blessed bridegroom, that he might present them as a chaste virgin to this divine husband. However, he studied in his public discourses to condescend to the capacity of the meaner sort of hearers, yet, It must be owned that this preaching gift was not so much accommodated and suited to a country congregation as it was to the judicious and learned. The subjects of sermons are so numerous and various, and the order of men's disposing of their thoughts upon these subjects so different, that a suit of clothes may be as soon made to answer every man's back as a fixed and invariable method may be prescribed that shall agree to every subject and every man's taste. Mr. Binning's method was singular and peculiar to himself, much after the haranguing way. He was no stranger to the rules of art, and knew well how to make his method subservient to the subjects he handled. And though he tells not his discourse has so many parts, yet it wanted not method, it being mani mum artis celer artem. His diction and language is easy and fluent, neat and fine, void of all affectation and bombast. His style is free from starch, lusciousness and intricacy. Every period has a kind of a design, negligent elegance, which arrests the reader's attention, and makes what he says, as apples of gold set in pictures of silver, so that, considering the time when he lived, it might be said that he had carried the orator's prize from his contemporaries in Scotland, and was not at that time inferior to the best pulpit orators in England, the English language having got its greatest embellishments and refinings but of late years. In his sermons, his matter gives life to his words, and his words add a luster to his matter. That great divine, Mr. James Durham, an excellent judge of men, gave this verdict of him, that there is no speaking after Mr. Binning, and truly he had the tongue of the learned, and knew how to speak a word in season. The subject matter of his sermons is mostly practical, and yet rational and argumentative, fit to inform the understanding of his hearers, and move their affections, and when controversies come in his way, he shows great acuteness and judgment in discussing and determining them, and no less skill in applying them to practice. His discourses are so solid and substantial, so heavenly and sublime, that they not only feed but feast the reader, as with marrow and fatness. In the most of them, we meet with much of the sublime, expressed in a most lofty, pathetic, and moving manner. Mr. Mwade says in his letter, that as to the whole of Mr. Binning's writings, I know no man's pen on the heads he hath handled more adapted for edification, or which, with a pleasant violence, will sooner find or force a passage into the heart of a judicious experienced reader, and cast fire, even ere he is aware of happy surprise, into his affections, and set them into a flame. And in another part of the same letter, he says, the subjects he discourses upon are handled with such a pleasant and profitable variety of thought and expression, that the hearer or reader is taken with it, as if he had never met with it before. He was such a skillful scribe, as knew how to bring out of his store things new and old, the old with such sweetness and savor, as it seemed still new, and the new retained its first sweetness so, as never to grow old.